IRIB English Radio.
Headlines this hour. The senior Iranian commander says the Israeli regime will be forced to leave the occupied Palestinian territories in a humiliating way. The police crime sentencing bill in the UK is facing a storm of controversy and concerns that it targets civil liberties. We'll have a report from London. Also in the headlines, Canada, mass grave containing remains of 215 children has been found at the site of a former residential school for Indigenous children.
This is Muse. Thanks for joining us.
Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says new Palestinian generations must make a plan on running the entire Palestinian territories based on the pre-1967 border. Brigadier General Ismail Khani says that such a plan is backed by the International Resistance Front and the Islamic Revolution. He said that running the whole territories by the Palestinians is a divine promise that will happen in the near future. He also hailed the Palestinian youth producing resources inside their country that will help them in their resistance against Israel. Khani underlined that the Israeli regime will be forced to leave the occupied territories in a humiliating way. A funeral procession has been held in the city of Nablus in the occupied West Bank for a Palestinian, gunned down by Israeli forces during protests against settlement expansion. The funeral was held in the village of Beitab, where 28-year-old Zakaria Hamayel was shot dead by Israeli troops. He was struck by a bullet in the chest. Hamayel was among a group of Palestinians protesting the expansion of Israeli settlements. Dozens of demonstrators were also wounded by Israeli forces. In recent weeks, tensions have been running high in the occupied territories as Israel has intensified its crackdown against Palestinian protesters. Palestinians are outraged at the regime's eviction plan in the Jerusalem Al-Quds neighborhood and its restrictions at the Al-Aqsa Mosque there. The recent deadly Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip has also added to the Palestinians' anger. Israeli actions against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip will come under the microscope. The UN has launched an investigation into Israel's devastating onslaught against Gaza.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are still reeling from the most recent Israeli onslaught against the coastal territory. Such scenes of destruction are seen throughout Gaza, with many families camping near their flattened homes. It could take many months before these ruined buildings are rebuilt. Israel's devastating onslaught left scores of Palestinians, including dozens of children, dead. The war was another stark reminder of how brutal the regime can be in dealing with the people it has subjugated for many decades. The Israelis argued during the operation that they were trying to wipe out resistance groups and their capabilities. But that's implausible because the sheer number of civilian casualties and horrific scenes of destruction of residential buildings leave no doubt that the regime committed numerous crimes and violations during its latest war. On Thursday, the United Nations Human Rights Council voted to launch an international investigation into the war. The draft resolution was presented by Pakistan on behalf of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and the Palestinian delegation to the United Nations. Pakistan's ambassador to the OIC, Khalil Hashmi, who was speaking on behalf of the organization, sharply criticized Israel's supporters. He blasted Israel's allies for shielding the occupier from global accountability and providing arms and ammunition for its widely reported war crimes and crimes of apartheid against the Palestinian people.
Before the resolution was adopted on Thursday, the UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet told the Rights Council that deadly Israeli strikes on Gaza might constitute war crimes. She said that Israel's strikes in Gaza caused widespread destruction of civilian infrastructure and fatalities. Her comments seem to have angered the Israelis.
United Nations Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet had tough words for Israel. She rejected Israeli claims that the destroyed buildings in Gaza were hosting members of the Palestinian resistance groups or used for military purposes. Meanwhile, the UN rights chief also criticized Hamas for firing rockets at Israeli cities, saying it constituted, quote, a clear violation of international humanitarian law. Thursday's announcement of an international investigation into alleged crimes committed during the 11-day war seems to have enraged the Israelis. The regime was quick to reject the decision, saying it would not cooperate with the probe. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, on the other hand, welcomed the investigation. The United States, which has observer status and no vote at the Geneva Forum, refrained from speaking at the special session. The investigators will have a broad mandate to look into all alleged violations. The probe will cover not just the Gaza Strip, but also the occupied West Bank and the Israeli cities, which came under retaliatory rocket attacks by Palestinian resistance groups. Future findings of the independent investigation are expected to once again mount pressure on the Israeli regime. But will its allies allow any meaningful action against it? The U.S. in particular has been extremely supportive of Tel Aviv. Observers believe this unwavering support leaves no room for the U.S. to want to be a mediator between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
Obviously, for people in Palestine, for many, many countries in the world, the notion of the United States being a mediator is simply a derisory. It's a joke, and nobody believes it. But for internal domestic consumption, that's important. It also is a fig leaf for Europeans, particularly the British, but others, to say, well, the United States is in charge and we don't have to do anything. But I think increasingly, and we see that, increasingly the United States is no longer considered to be a mediator. The Palestinians, for sure, cannot continue to do this. Abbas cannot continue to agree to these things, and that's obvious.
Hundreds of U.S. forces are reportedly going to stay in Afghanistan in a bid to stop the Taliban to capture Kabul. It is reported that British and Turkish forces will also assist the U.S. troops. Amin Alami has more from Kabul.
According to British daily The Sun, the U.S. is going to follow a complex strategy regarding the withdrawal of its troops from Afghanistan. The Sun reported that Washington is going to keep hundreds of its forces in the country in order to avoid the collapse of Kabul by Taliban. According to the report, 600 U.S. Marines could be deployed to protect the U.S. embassy in Afghan capital. British and Turkish troops may reportedly assist the U.S. forces. However, experts here believe such a move is part of Washington's psychological war against Afghans after spreading further fear among locals.
The U.S. is after wickedness. It threatens us of the consequences of its withdrawal, such as the fate of women's rights. But we ask them to just leave our country. We know how to deal with the challenges.
In the meantime, many here name the U.S. government as a symbol of imperialism that doesn't care about basic issues such as peace, human rights, and liberties.
It's very naive to think that American came here to do anything with poverty, to do anything with peace building, to do anything with democracy or human rights. In fact, it's the other way around. The American presence, not in Afghanistan, but in the region and in the world, in the bigger picture, is to create more conflict, is to create more poverty, is to create more dependency to the United States.
As observers say, the U.S. and its allies want to draw a dark picture for the future of Afghanistan under such a scenario. The Afghan government will soon collapse by the Taliban and the country will go back to 1990s. In such circumstances, political elites in Afghanistan say, since Afghans have fully experienced the cost of foreign interference in their country over the past four decades, they need to firstly come together and make a united nation and then make a strong policy to deal with foreign players in line with their own national interests. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
In the UK, the police crime sentencing and courts bill is close to becoming law, with the government arguing that they need more power to break down unlawful protests. Opponents of the move, however, maintain that the plans in reality will target civil liberties, the legitimate right to protest, and the right of assembly, which many argue should be a cornerstone of British democracy. Our UK correspondent Richard Sudan has more.
Activists are galvanizing opposition to the government's planned controversial policing bill, which is now close to becoming law, highlighting a number of issues as more Kill the Bill protests are planned.
It's a massive assault on our democratic right to protest in this country. And let's be clear here, this is specifically aimed at the environmental movement, thousands of young people on the streets demanding that we tackle the climate emergency, and the Black Lives Matter movement, thousands of young people on the streets demanding justice for black people. And when the government saw these two movements in the summer of last year taking to the streets as they did, they decided that they needed to put in place the most draconian legislation.
Many anticipate a new wave of protest as concerns over the right of assembly grow.
I think this will be the government's poll tax movement moment, and we'll see thousands and thousands and thousands of people in cities right across the country, as we have over the last 3 months, stepping up the campaign against this bill. But it's an absolute disaster for democracy in Britain.
The bill could also have a devastating impact on other marginalised communities in Britain.
This government is conducting a culture war. That's what it's doing. It's trying to undermine and eliminate aspects of black culture, Muslim culture, traveller culture. And when you think that people have had a way of life for thousands of years, and now you're going to introduce legislation, rather than facilitating their way of life as British people within a multicultural democracy, you're actually going to introduce a law that denies them their very way of life.
Criticism of government plans will continue amid fears that the potential damage might be irreversible.
The police crime sentencing and courts bill continues to see mass opposition up and down the country, with experts deeply concerned about the potential long-term impact on civil liberties. Richard Sudan, London.
There have been several protests throughout the UK outside of the weapons manufacturing factories that have been supplying arms to the Israeli regime. Ahmed Kabaya went to the most recent one in the British northern town of Blackburn, and has more in this report.
Hundreds of pro-Palestine protesters gathered outside the BAE Systems factory in Blackburn in the north of England to call upon the weapons manufacturer to stop supplying components for F-35 fighter jets that have been used in a recent bombardment of Gaza.
BAE, which is one of the largest companies in the UK supplying arms, parts of jets, fighter jets, to the Israeli terrorist state, which is bombing children, killing innocent people, and BAE is also funding other oppressive regimes like Saudi Arabia, and their arms are destroying the lives of innocent people.
The protest came on the back of one of the largest pro-Palestine demonstrations in British history on Saturday, and similar demonstrations throughout the week led by Palestine Action Group, who have been protesting outside the Israeli-owned Elbit Systems factory that provides drones, weapons and military hardware to the Israeli army.
We've seen protests in Leicester, Tamworth, Oldham and today in Blackburn as the anger amongst the British public begins to swell at the thought that British weapons are being used by the Israeli army to kill Palestinian children.
They're shooting kids, murdering little children. If that was their children, what would they say? So us lot standing here, we're going to stand out here and we're going to make noise for our people, our brothers and sisters are being oppressed. Free, free Palestine!
The name of the Jewish people is being misused. And the term anti-Semite, so-called anti-Semite, is being thrown around. Anyone who dare criticise strongly what the Zionists are doing is labelled as a Jew hater, and it's not true.
It's become increasingly clear that the British government's unwavering support for Israel is not representative of the feeling on the ground, with more than 383,000 Brits calling on their government to sanction the Israeli regime for their crimes against the Palestinian people. But while the UK remains complicit through the hundreds of millions of pounds worth of weapons sold to the Israeli army, some might wonder if the UK should also be held accountable. Ahmed Cabello, Blackburn.
In Canada, a mass grave containing remains of 215 children, some as young as 3 years old, has been found, with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau describing the discovery as heartbreaking. The remains were unearthed at the site of a former residential school for Indigenous children near the town of Kamloops in British Columbia. The bodies belong to the students of the school, but authorities say the cause and timing of their deaths are not known yet. The Kamloops Indian Residential School was established in 1890 and closed its doors in 1978. The 2015 investigation to Canada's residential school system concluded that the system, typically run by Christian churches, constituted cultural genocide. The report documented physical abuse, rape, malnutrition, and other atrocities against the schoolchildren. It also found that more than 4,000 children died while attending these schools. International human rights lawyer Edward Corrigan says the discovery of bodies of Indigenous students at a former Canadian school is another example of the country's historical anti-Indigenous campaign.
But this was a cover-up. You know, when 215 people die in any sort of institution, you know, there should have been an investigation, but they're buried in secret on the property of the school. And this is, you know, is a terrible situation. In some ways, unfortunately, the people who probably buried the bodies and committed the crimes are no longer here. But the community is owes a debt to the families and to these native communities that suffered horrifically. And, you know, this has been a, you know, several hundred year campaign of cultural and even physical genocide against the native population in Canada.
Colombian President Iván Duque says that he is deploying military troops in the country's third largest city, Cali, amid deadly anti-government protests there.
We have seen acts of vandalism and we have seen acts against public infrastructure. I want to make it absolutely clear. From tonight begins the maximum deployment of military assistance to the National Police in Cali and the province of Valle. This deployment will be headed by experienced officials.
And that is for World News. That's my life for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Africa Today.
The brutal war launched recently by the Israeli apartheid regime against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip galvanized African people who raised their voices in support of the oppressed people of Palestine. Numerous demonstrations were held across Africa to express solidarity with Palestinians and to condemn Israeli atrocities. South Africa's ruling African National Congress Youth League convener explains here on why they came out to express solidarity with Palestinians. Let's take a listen.
As the ANC Youth League, to pledge solidarity with the people of Palestine who have for decades been oppressed by the apartheid state of Israel. There is no difference in the manner in which the Israeli state is acting versus the manner in which the apartheid state used to act. Their latest attack on people who are praying is absolutely atrocious.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today, which is focusing on Africa's support for Palestinians in Gaza who endured 12 days of heavy bombardment by the Israeli apartheid regime. African people have experienced colonialism, apartheid, racism, and discrimination perpetrated by Western countries, which currently support the Israeli regime, and therefore they have a natural affinity with Palestinians.
Africa slams Israeli apartheid crimes against Palestinians. The Israeli apartheid regime launched a bloody bombing campaign on Gaza on the 10th of May after harassing Palestinians in Jerusalem al-Quds and attempts to steal their lands in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of the city. The occupying regime announced a unilateral ceasefire on the 21st of May. Atrocities perpetrated by the Israeli regime during this war, especially the killing of innocent women and children, ignited worldwide demonstrations, including spontaneous protest rallies in Africa. Despite attempts by authorities in some countries to stop the rallies, protesters came out in large numbers to express solidarity with Palestinians. This is one such rally in Kenya's capital, Nairobi.
I stand with my brothers and sisters in Palestine. I pray day and night that my sisters and brothers get peace, inshallah.
This the police is arresting me. What did I do? I was protesting. Peaceful demonstration. Peaceful demonstration. Now that's what they did.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa told France 24 that the Israeli war on Gaza reminded him of the apartheid era in his own country.
The images that we've been seeing of people being prevented to move around, of their homes being destroyed, of people being driven out of their homes before they are bombed, of the Israeli soldiers manhandling people, brings back very terrible memories of our own history and apartheid, when people were forcibly moved from their homes, which they'd occupied for generations, when their homes were destroyed. So this, for us, is very close to our own suffering and apartheid.
For more on Africa's condemnation of recent Israeli regime crimes in the besieged Gaza Strip, we have contacted Maureen Kasuku, a member of Kenyans for Palestine, a grassroots network of internationalists standing in anti-colonial solidarity with the Palestinian people. Welcome to the program, Ms. Kasuku.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
We also have with us here today Hossein Khalid, who is the executive director of Haki Africa, a human rights organization based in Mombasa, Kenya. Thank you for joining us today, Mr. Khalid.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start off with Ms. Maureen Kasuku. Now, we've seen spontaneous demonstrations across Africa in solidarity with Palestinians and to condemn Israeli atrocities. What's your take on this?
What we're witnessing right now in Africa is African internationalism in action. Africans have always been the vanguard when it comes to resistance movements. We have always been at the forefront in condemning racist ideologies, including Zionism. We understand what it means to live under colonialism. We understand what it means to live under apartheid. And we understand the struggle for self-determination. That's why Africans all over the continent are standing in solidarity with the people of Palestine, because their struggles are also our struggles. So we understand what exactly they are going through. And that is why you see that the whole continent has stood up against Israeli apartheid in Palestine.
Anti-Israeli and pro-Palestinian rallies have been held in several African countries, including South Africa, Kenya, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal, and Libya. In Kenya, apart from the capital Nairobi, protesters also gathered in the coastal city of Mombasa in a show of their support for Palestinians. They denounced Israeli regime crimes against the Palestinians. A protester in the city of Mombasa voices her support here for Palestinians.
My message today is we all need to stand with Palestine, and whatever is happening, we are all not safe for whatever is happening. So muhimu hapa, we just pass the message that humanity is the key.
Now, Mr. Khalid, can you tell us more about the rallies which were recently held in Kenya to condemn atrocities by Israeli apartheid regime in Gaza?
The rallies in Kenya, as you know, is the same case across the African continent, are spontaneous. It's groups of youth who decide to come out collectively in different cities, in different villages, and they feel they want to show their solidarity because they believe that this is a just cause. And the good thing about the protest is that they are multi-religious. So it's not just Muslims who are coming out. It's Muslims and Christians and Hindus who believe that justice must prevail anywhere in the world.
The occupation of Palestine by the Israeli apartheid regime reminds many in Africa of their own struggle during the colonial era. Addressing an African Union summit last year, South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa even compared the so-called peace plan for Palestine being pushed by the U.S. to the Bantustan system, which was implemented by the apartheid regime in his own country.
I'd like to say, with regards to the U.S.-inspired plan for the Palestinians, that as I listened to it and as I read everything that's written about it, it brought to mind a horrible history that we as South Africa have gone through, that the apartheid regime once imposed a Bantustan system on the people of South Africa without consultation with them and with all the oppressive elements that that plan had. As I listened to the Arab League and as I listened to our colleagues from Palestine, it sounds like this plan, one, has not been consulted with all the people that matter, especially the Palestinians, and it sounds like a Bantustan type of construct.
Well, we had the South African President Ramaphosa comparing the situation in Palestine under Israeli apartheid regime to that of South Africa during the apartheid regime. Now, Mr. Khalid, what are some of the commonalities between the current struggle for the liberation of Palestine and struggle for independence in Africa?
I believe in Africa, we have gone through a similar experience. Many years back, decades ago, our forefathers fought for the freedom of our countries. And so seeing the same thing happening in Palestine, I believe we can draw parallels with what we went through. And that is why you are seeing spontaneous protests and demonstrations across the African continent in support of the Palestinian cause and to call for the end of oppression by the Israeli government. Here in Kenya, the Palestinian support movement is strong. We have seen protests and demonstrations in major cities, including in Nairobi and Mombasa. And many people are out there tweeting, using social media, Facebook, Instagram, to send their message of solidarity to Palestinians.
The African Union Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki Mohammed has strongly condemned the Israeli regime forces' violent attacks against worshippers in the Al-Aqsa Mosque and bombing of the Gaza Strip. Mohammed reiterated the continued AU support for the Palestinian people in their legitimate quest for an independent and sovereign state.
Now, Maureen, African Union has condemned Israeli regime atrocities in Palestine. Now, is condemnation enough? And what further action do you think should be taken by the AU in support of Palestine?
I don't think condemnation is enough, because often these African governments offer lip service to the people of Palestine, but then continue to maintain cozy relationships with Israel. They purchase weapons from Israel, they purchase surveillance material from Israel, and these weapons and these cyber espionage tools are meant, you know, to maintain repressive regimes in Africa. So they give money to the Israeli regime, and this money is used to strengthen the Israeli regime in occupied Palestine. So condemnation is not enough. I think African governments should cut bilateral ties with Israel.
Well, it remains to be seen if African countries will listen to the people and take tangible action in boycotting the apartheid regime in Israel.
Kenya, Niger, and Tunisia are three African countries that are currently non-permanent members of the United Nations Security Council. Citizens of these countries expect their countries to take a firm stand in condemning Israeli atrocities in Gaza.
Now, Mr. Khalid, what role can these African countries, which are members of the UN Security Council, play in support of Palestinians?
I believe that my country, Kenya, together with Nigeria and Tunisia, who are presently non-permanent members of the UN Security Council, can do much more to ensure Palestinian people live in peace. As African countries who have gone through colonial rule for many years, I believe that Kenya, Nigeria, and Tunisia should push the United Nations to send a peacekeeping mission in Palestine to ensure that no more rights or violations of any kind of Palestinians continues unabated. We believe that as African countries, we can make a bigger voice, we can have a bigger voice in what is happening in Palestine, and we can demand for accountability by the Israeli troops.
Thanks a lot for that, Mr. Khalid, and I'm sure you meant they are Niger and not Nigeria.
Africa slams Israeli apartheid crimes against Palestinians.
Now, in a country like Morocco, despite the kingdom's move to normalize ties with the Israeli apartheid regime, the masses are clearly with the oppressed nation of Palestine. Now, what message does this send to the monarchy in these North African states?
I think that Morocco's monarchy is clearly disconnected to its people. We know for sure that Morocco has had a number of protests where the people have come out openly to condemn the atrocities that are committed against the Palestinians and to demand that Israel immediately ends its aggression on the Palestinian people. to see that the government of Morocco remains quiet, remains silent, even when the large majority of its population are standing in solidarity with Palestinians, is a big embarrassment to the monarchy. It clearly shows there is a disconnect, and I think it's about time for the people of Morocco to consider whether the kingdom is helping them as a country to move forward. I believe that at every given point in time, there comes a time when the people have to decide.
South Africans vividly remember the Sharpeville massacre as an event that marked a turning point against the apartheid regime. During this gruesome massacre in March 1960, the apartheid regime forces gunned down 250 black protesters. The recent war waged on Gaza by the apartheid regime in Tel Aviv has been compared by some to the Sharpeville massacre, which eventually led to the downfall of the white minority rule in South Africa.
Now, Mr. Khalid, the brutal Israeli war on Gaza has been likened to the Sharpeville massacre during the apartheid era in South Africa. Now, this massacre was one of the events that triggered the eventual downfall of the South African apartheid regime. Now, do you see the same fate befalling the Israeli apartheid regime?
I am a human rights activist, and I know that oppression never lasts forever. Any other day, justice will always prevail. And we know for sure that freedom in Palestine is coming. This is something, as a human rights activist, as a human rights defender, we know that wherever there are atrocities, it can never last forever. We believe that this is the beginning of an end to this oppression, and we believe that all we need is the world to stand together against oppression. All we need is the people of Palestine to remain steadfast. All we need is the people of Africa to remember that they were in the same situation just a few decades away, so that they can stand together and champion for the rights of Palestinians.
Now, momentum has also been gaining for the international movement to boycott, divest from, and sanction Israel, known as BDS, in support of Palestinian national liberation. A similar tactic of international boycott played a crucial role in delegitimizing the South African apartheid system.
Recently, the labor movements joined the South African BDS coalition at the Durban Harbor to support dock workers who refused to offload cargo from an Israeli container ship in a stand against the regime's atrocities in Palestine.
Dozens of South African dock workers picketed at a port in Durban on Friday as they showed their support for Palestinians. The action comes after they had attempted to boycott offloading cargo from an Israeli ship. The Zim Shanghai vessel arrived at the port on Thursday, while unions and workers were negotiating with the country's transport authority to block exports coming from Israel.
The international boycott of South Africa during the apartheid era was instrumental in the eventual downfall of this regime. Will the BDS movement also be instrumental in the collapse of the Israeli apartheid regime?
Yes, I do believe that the BDS movement worldwide will play a huge role in the collapse of the Israeli regime in occupied Palestine. The Kenyans for Palestine movement has its own BDS strategy, which seems to be working very well.
South African anti-apartheid leader Nelson Mandela and his party, the African National Congress, remained on a United States terrorism watch list until 2008. Former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher dismissed the African National Congress, ANC, as a typical terrorist organization and refused to back sanctions against the South African government that pursued the notorious policy of apartheid.
Now, Mr. Khalid Hussein, Western countries branded Nelson Mandela a terrorist, and even his party, ANC, was listed as a terrorist organization. History is repeating itself in Palestine as Hamas, Islamic Jihad resistance movements, and their leaders have been branded as terrorists by Western countries. Are you surprised?
We as Kenya, we know that our forefathers who fought for our independence were initially called terrorists by the colonialists. As you've rightfully mentioned, Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress, ANC party, which fought for the independence of South Africa were equally called terrorists by the colonialists. So this, and the Western government. So this is a trend. History is full of these examples. And we believe that anyone who is standing firm and fighting for the rights of their people and fighting for an end to human rights violations is a freedom fighter. So I believe that people should continue in the struggle to fight for human rights. Palestinians should continue to struggle to fight for their independence, and history will judge them right.
In the Senegalese capital, Dakar, thousands of protesters took part in a demonstration to lend support to oppressed Palestinians. One interesting aspect of this rally in Dakar was the participation of Palestinians who were forced by the Israeli apartheid regime to leave their homeland and have now been granted asylum in Senegal. Let's take a listen.
It's really heartwarming. It's really amazing. And at the same time, I'm communicating to my family back home. See, a lot of people are coming out for you. It makes them stronger. It makes them like more patient. You know? It's amazing.
It's something great. It's just something unbelievable. I'm so glad. I'm so proud of the Senegalese people. And I know how they love Palestine. And I know how they love Al-Aqsa.
Khalid, our last question to you. Now, after the mass pro-Palestinian protests in Africa, should we expect African governments to pile more pressure on the Israeli apartheid regime and force it to end its occupation of Palestine?
For African countries that have lived through this kind of experiences, it needs to be more than just condemning the actions that we are seeing presently. We as human rights defenders, we as civil society actors, are pushing our government to do more than just condemn. We want to see action taken. We want to see our government standing up and defending freedom of any person, whether it's Palestinians or anyone in the world. These kinds of atrocities are not supposed to be happening. And that is why we are saying African countries need to do more, because we know what these kinds of atrocities mean. Our forefathers have been through that, and we expect them to do more, to do better.
In Cape Town, South Africa, the rally in support for Palestine was organized by Al-Ghouts Foundation and several pro-Palestinian organizations and political parties.
Well, mostly I stand here as a father. My son today is turning 4 years old, Mandela Ikram Mandev. And to continuously witness children in Palestine being shot in the back, being put in prison, it really pains our hearts as fathers, as parents, and also as citizens in the Republic of South Africa that have witnessed such brutalities in our past. And we are here today as a family with my wife, my father-in-law, as well as my mother-in-law, to say that we will not rest until we see a free Palestine in our lifetime. And we will speak against the brutality that is meted out against innocent children and women in Palestine. And that is why we are here united as a family today, to charge forward with what Madiba once said, that our freedom is incomplete until the Palestinians are free.
A powerful statement there by Mandla Mandela, who has vowed that he will not rest until Palestine is free. Now, Maureen, you have the last word today in our program. Do you see total emancipation and freedom of Palestine in the near future?
I just want to urge all Africans at home and abroad to stand in solidarity with the people of Palestine, because their struggles are our struggles too. This is African internationalism at play. We must stand against apartheid. We must stand against Zionism, and we will march forward towards the sovereignty of Palestine and all African nations.
Well, we have seen how recent rallies in Africa are a manifestation of Africa's overwhelming support for the liberation of Palestine and condemnation of the Israeli regime. Well, and that wraps it up for this edition of Africa Today. As always, it was great having you, and don't forget to drop us a line through our social media handles. Goodbye for now.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be addressing a question which is very important and is concerned with one of the properties and characteristics of God that have been mentioned in the Quran. Actually, two of them. Those properties are God's wisdom, His hikmat, and secondly, His justice or His adalat. Both of these have been mentioned in the sacred and religious texts as characteristics of God, either mentioned in the form of names of God, such as Al-Hakim, Al-Adl, the wise or the just, or in the form of attributes such as God possessing wisdom and hikmat, or justice and adalat. In some of our previous sessions, we examined the meaning of hikmat and wisdom. We said that sometimes wisdom is used as a characteristic and a property of knowledge, in which case it refers to the highest form of knowledge regarding the highest thing that can be known. So there's two elements in it. First of all, the thing that this knowledge knows is the greatest and highest of things that can be known. And secondly, the knowledge of that thing that we're trying to understand is the highest form of knowledge of that thing. In other words, the ilm, or the knowledge, is the best, and the ma'lum, or the thing known, is also the best. The second meaning of wisdom that we talked about earlier was the fact that wisdom is sometimes a characteristic of and a property of actions. For example, you say that what you did wasn't very wise. In this sense, a wisdom and hikmah refer to the performance of an action in the best possible way, in such a way that all of the elements and properties of that action, all of the characteristics of that action, are put in the place where they deserve to be put, and the action is devoid of anything that's not becoming of it. Now, regarding the question that we want to address today is this: what exactly, in our discussion, the discussion that we're going to have today and in the forthcoming sessions, which one of the meanings of wisdom are we going to be discussing? For our esteemed listeners who have been following us in these sessions and in these recordings and in these broadcasts, now they know that we've already talked about God's knowledge in some of our previous sessions. So wisdom or hikmah as a property of knowledge is something that we don't want to repeat here in these discussions. So the discussion that we're going to have is regarding God's wisdom as it is a property and a characteristic of his actions, which we said means the creation of something or the performance of an action in the best way conceivable, in such a way that the benefit that we expect from the action accrues from it and results from it. And of course this necessitates that all of the dimensions and the stages of the action are placed and performed in the place that's proper to them and as they deserve to be performed. As you can see, this description of wisdom as a property of action is very closely tied up with the meaning of justice. That's why we've decided to talk about justice and wisdom, adalat and hikmat, together in one discussion, because they're very closely tied up with one another. Inshallah, we can talk more about this in our subsequent and forthcoming sessions. Until then, thank you for joining us here once again. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies: shortwave 31 meters 9855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters 9835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.